morning, honorable members, board chairperson, Ms. Lawrence, CEO, Mr. Monsami, your team, and a special welcome to a new member and alternate in our committee, Ms. Thandiwe Mfulo. You're most welcome to the committee, and we hope that you'll enjoy being a member thereof. And thank you that you've been allocated as an alternate to this committee. Thank you very much. You're almost welcome. We have been listening to presentation from the department and different entities. All the entities, actually, you are the last. They'll take us to space as an oversight. They are looking even at Mars. They say there's habitation there. You just need $3 billion, and you'll be able to go there. we'll be preparing a report, and we'll be discussing the report, and that we'll be presenting to the House on the performance of the department and its entities, and also being in a position also to look at advocating for more funds. You know, it's not easy, but we're trying our best where we see that there's a need for that. But as I said, you're most welcome, and we're looking forward to hearing your annual report. My name is Lindiwe Masego. I'm the committee chairperson.
Castle Matale, committee member.
Nokuzola Ndongeni, committee member.
Chantal King, committee member.
Nick Kornoff, committee member.
Good morning, Agnes Stack, committee member. Good morning, Thandiwe Mfulo, new committee member.
Morning, Maisela Gigana, committee member.
Thank you, committee member. We have two apologies, one of Honorable Dr. Lotrit and Honorable Paulson. Those are the two apologies. We would hand over to you, Chairperson, to introduce your board, and I'm sure you know who will be making the presentation. And then after that, we'll ask questions and comments, and you'll respond. Once again, welcome.
Thank you so much, Chair Maseko, and to the committee members as well. It's indeed an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you also for accommodating us and meeting with us today. Today I have Dr. Valbu Nsami, the new CEO of SANSA, with us. Next to him is our CFO, Ms. Bulelewa Pono. We have a board member with us, Mr. Johan Prinsloo, and then the acting MD of Space Science, Dr. Gert Lamprecht. So those are the committee members, well, the members are with us today for this opportunity. As the South African National Space Agency, our strategic focus is to address South Africa's challenges through space products and services to lead high-impact space research, develop the human capacity, and ensure transformation. We try and enhance the global competitiveness of South Africa in space, and we look at fostering global space partnerships. I think it's also pertinent for me just to mention at this particular point, last week, or just the week before that, was the International Astronautical Federation, and Dr. Valbu Nsami, the SANSA CEO, has just been appointed as the Vice President of the organization as well. So again, establishing closer links for South Africa in the international forum as well. So we congratulate him on that particular achievement. I'd like to now hand over to Dr. Nsami to take you through the presentation we've prepared around SANSA's 2016-2017 annual report. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Chair, and thank you, Honorable Maseko and Honorable Members. So I'm going to just present on the 2016 SANSA annual report, but I'm going to assume that a large part of the actual report has been read. So I'm just going to focus on the high-level successes and some of the challenges. So in terms of just on the performance overview overall, we had 17 targets in total, and we achieved 15 of those, and that gives us a success rate of 88%, essentially. There were two targets that we did not meet, and the one was on the satellite program, and then the other was on enhancing organizational performance. So just to pause on the EOSAT 1 development, what actually happened in November last year, we kind of stopped the project momentarily just to look at whether we could reposition the satellite, given the fiscal pressures we have, in terms of whether we could cut on the cost and reduce the timelines, because we are chasing a timeline of trying to get the satellite launched by early 2019. So we had a repositioning exercise where we opened up the discussion to other industry players, apart from the prime contractor, which is Danel at the moment, to see whether there were other options we could bring into building the satellite that other industry players had. And we concluded that exercise around about February, March last year, and we presented it to the board. And essentially the outcome of that was that we still stay with the original option, which was so that we can reduce any risk associated with bringing new elements into the development of the satellite. So that kind of delayed the project, which accounts for why we achieved only 37% versus the 50%. But I think as the project is now proceeding, we're kind of catching up on that. But we had to do that exercise just to check whether we could do it any other way to reduce the cost. On the enhancing organizational performance, we had actually identified four interventions that we thought was important to make SANSA a high-performing agency, but we only achieved at 3.5, just over three of those initiatives, which means that we didn't completely achieve that particular target. So those are the two targets that we did not achieve for the 2016-17 financial year. And then just to zone in a little bit on the performance highlights itself, in the last financial year, we produced five high-impact national products, and this includes services that we render to clients outside of SANSA. So, for example, there are at least two products that we focus on for the defense force, the defense sector, and then also nationally, there's a vegetation index, national base maps that we produce. So in total, we produce five new high-impact national products. And then we also undertook three government policy support tools, and this includes one in space science, one in Earth observation in terms of the water aspect and how it's managed in South Africa. And then the third one was to look at the state of the industry in South Africa with regards to the space industry itself. And so those papers would feed into other work that's currently on the go, including a industry development framework that is currently being developed between DTI, DST, and SANSA. In total, because we have a large cohort of researchers in SANSA, we produced 30 research papers in the 2016-17 financial year. Now, you'll note that the national average in South Africa is just over two, but we produced well above the average. And that's largely because we've had a few successes. If you look at our research score, for that matter, we've had a number of our researchers actually being rated by the National Research Foundation. And then on the satellite passes, so in terms of the SANSA space operations, we track satellite as they come across, and we tracked 11,000 of those satellites as they came across. And there was close to about over 98% success rate of tracking all of the satellites that came past. Okay, so that was a fairly significant success for us. We also directly engaged close to 19,000 learners. And that's where we kind of target, for example, the National Science Week. We have a World Space Week, so there's a lot of activities around that. We engage a lot of learners. And we also, from a human capital development point of view, we support 87 students, and this is primarily at master's PhD level. We also embedded in that pursuing previously disadvantaged individuals. So 80% of those students are previously disadvantaged individuals. So we're trying to also look at it from a transformation point of view as well. And then in terms of the direct jobs we supported, and this is mainly through the satellite development project, the EOSAT-1, we supported 52 direct jobs. And this is excluding what we employ within SANSA, which is over 180 people. As part of the EOSAT project, we contracted to the local industry 77 million rand worth of contract expenditure. And 13 million of that was to small, medium enterprises. And this, again, is to promote the small, medium enterprises in South Africa. And then with regards to ensuring that we capacitate the local space sector, we ran 17 short courses, and these were presented by SANSA staff. This is to the broader industry in terms of how they could use some of the products and services more effectively. And then we also had 32 participants in a joint international space weather camp. And so this is a joint initiative between South Africa, Germany, and the U.S. And there are students from each of these countries would spend time in South Africa, the U.S., and Germany. And the prime focus is on space weather. And this is also about building the international network which is needed in this particular domain, because space science is an international endeavor. It's not a South African initiative necessarily. We also calibrated 162 compasses. So just to give you a sense, the Defense Force, as much as we have GPS or global navigation satellite services, the Defense Force cannot rely on GPS itself. I mean, those platforms can be switched off tomorrow. So you actually need a reliable source for navigation, and you need to use magnetic compasses. But you need to ensure that those compasses are accurately calibrated. So the Defense Force actually, as a fallback, uses the magnetic compasses. And we calibrate all of those aircrafts that have those compasses on board. We also had 10 international visiting students coming from outside of South Africa, and 15 international visiting researchers. And we had seven public lectures hosted by these researchers. Now, what's interesting is it's showing that there's a... SANSA is being recognized internationally, both from a student perspective and for international researchers. I was just telling the colleagues this morning, about a year ago, there was a competition run in Ethiopia where the winning prize was a visit to SANSA Space Science, which shows that how even people in the continent view what we do here at SANSA as valuable. And then, Chair, just on the, just on the space weather, two things I should mention on the space weather. We are actually in the process of launching a new space weather center, or a revamped space weather center. So we do have a space weather center in the Romanos, and we're hoping that this will be launched sometime this month or next month, and we in Romanos, and we will tender an invite to the portfolio committee as well. But what's interesting is that there's a new regulation that has been passed by ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, which says that all flights, international flights, must have space weather information filed with the flight path. So if you're flying, you have to have space weather information. The pilots must have space weather information. And there's two reasons for that. Firstly, your navigation signal will be affected by any disturbances that are coming out from space, from the sun itself. The second is that if you fly extensively, there's a lot of radiation. You get radiation dose, essentially. And the more you fly, the higher the radiation. And it becomes even sort of increased if you're flying during a magnetic storm, because that means there's excessive radiation coming from the sun, which affects people or passengers on the flight. So we want to keep a track on what's happening in space, and that gets fed into the pilot who's flying the plane. But what's also important is that about 3 weeks ago, we had the biggest solar storm in the last decade. The last such storm was in 2005. And I think South Africa also got a wake-up call because some of the flights, and including the Defense Force, their HF communications was knocked out. And they all turned to SANZA for assistance. It just shows that we might think of space as going to Mars and wherever. It's actually not quite that. If you had to switch off all the satellites today, you will see the impact. You will not be able to use your cell phones. You can't do internet banking. You know, you wouldn't get a weather report. So we actually rely on space science and technology on a daily basis. And Chair, just turning our attention to the financials, you'll see there's a figure on the outside, but I'll come back to it. So that's the figure in red if you've got your hard copies. That's for the last financial year. But what I want to point out is that if you look at this financial year, 2016-17, our parliamentary grant was 124 million. And the ring fence grants that we received was 102 million. And a large proportion of that, probably about 90% or more, was for the satellite project. And then we have exchange transactions. Because we offer services and products from SANZA, we get income generated, and that's largely the exchange transactions. So if you compare the income with the expenditure, you'll notice that our employee costs...
I'm sorry, the inner space is the...
The last year. 2016-17. Yeah, the outer ones are actually for the previous one,
okay.
The 2015-16. So I'm just doing a comparison to see how the situation has changed. If you look at the expenditure side, our employee cost is 104 million. And then our operating cost is 120 million. And then our capital expenditure, most of that which comes from the ring fence fund, is for the EOSAT project. So in effect, our operating cost, total operating cost, which is our employee cost and the operating cost itself, is about just over 220 million. But our parliamentary grant is 120 million, which means that we actually have to go and generate income to make ourselves sustainable. And I'll come back to that point. And if you go and compare that with the previous financial year, you'll see that our parliamentary grant in the previous financial year was 124 million, whereas our employee cost was 96 million, and our operating cost was even higher back then. So the situation is not improving. In fact, it's getting worse. So the big question we are asking is, do we need to be still focused on public good in terms of what SANZA needs to offer to the general public, or should we start commercializing? And I think that's an open-ended question that we still have to deal with as we look at the sustainability of SANZA. Well, what's even scarier, Chair, is if you take this figure, and this is the total global expenditure of space programs across the world, you will see kind of in the dark blobs, South Africa spends about $20 million. Okay. If you look at Angola on the continent, $63 million, Nigeria is $61 million, Algeria is $115 million, Morocco is $73 million, and so on. So you'll see there's a number of other African countries are spending way more than we are doing in South Africa. And part of the reason is because a lot of them have telecommunications satellites, which takes up a lot of the costs. But by and large, they do spend a lot more than we do. Yeah. And what's interesting to note, even though they have those high budgets, South Africa, or SANZA, is still the leading agency on the continent. And many of these countries look to South Africa for support. So whether or not we maintain that leading position or not will come down to the financial resourcing and how we move forward with regards to our own development. So that's just to paint the financial situation and the global positioning that we have. In terms of the employee demographics, and this was to just look at the racial distribution, so you will notice that we kind of not quite there in terms of the demographics. So it's 64% African, 8% colored, 5% Indian, and 23% white. And if you compare that with the previous financial year, we were 62% on black, 8% on colored, 5% on Indian, and 25% on white. So we've made a slight adjustment towards the correct end of the demographics. So there's been some improvement. And at the moment, we're kind of fairly stagnant. There's no room for flexibility, and even at the moment, we have to reconsider when people leave current positions, whether we should be filling them or not, because of the financial situation. So if we had to address the demographics, we need to ensure that there's a growth curve that we are on, that we can bring in new staff that will change the demographics. And then also on the gender distribution, we have 61% male and 39% female. And compare that to the last year was 62% male and 38% female. Just a 1% move in terms of moving from male to female. But there's still a large gender imbalance. And again, we can only deal with that if there is some growth potential where we can absorb new staff to reflect the new demographics. There are some new appointments being made with this African female being employed, especially at executive level. So that's also very promising on our side. Then just wrapping up on the implementation challenges, Chair. I did mention the suboptimal funding levels. There's a big focus on fundraising to keep ourselves sustainable. And just to give you an example, we provide satellite data to government departments, and we procure what we call spot data. It's a specific type of satellite data. And the cost of that over 5 years is about 180 million rand. Now, we don't get that funding necessarily from government. We have to find sources of funding to acquire those imageries and then provide that to government departments. We are looking at a cost recovery model. We have highlighted the challenge to the minister, and she has asked the DG to, in fact, we're meeting with the DG next week just to see how we can make a better proposal to Treasury to up the funding. So we have the full support from the DST on that. And then we were not able to implement the full mandate of SANZA. There's two areas that we have not been focusing on. The one is global navigation satellite services, and that's for navigation, positioning, and timing applications. And the other one is satellite telecommunications. I'm glad to indicate, Chair, that there is some movement on both of these fronts. On the global navigation satellite services, there has been a pilot project that's been run in SADC, which has proved successful. We're now looking at operationalizing that, so that will take care of the GNSS component. And then we have been working with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, the DST and DTI. In fact, the DTPS has put together a national committee that's looking at a telecom strategy for South Africa, and we are involved in that endeavor. So hopefully that will be a positive move as well. And then the full funding for ESAT 1 was not secured, but in our discussion with the minister, she assured us that the commitment is there from the DST. So we're moving ahead in terms of the manufacture of EOSAT based on that commitment. The funding challenges will get a little bit tighter as we move ahead because there are new commitments that are coming through. So, for example, there's a BRICS Space Cooperation Framework, which we are busy signing on to. So when China chaired, there's a project that's on the go where there's a virtual constellation of satellites, where existing satellites. But in 2 years' time, we might have to look at a physical constellation, where South Africa will have to also fund another satellite into the BRICS constellation. We are also working with African partners on what is called the African Data Intensive Research Cloud, which seems very promising, and there's a lot of support from other African countries. So we'll have to find the funding for that. And we've also communicated, we've been talking about the African Resource Management Constellation for years now. I've communicated to my counterparts, the head of agencies in Nigeria, Kenya, and Algeria, to see if we are still interested in this project, and all of them responded to say, yes, we are. And in fact, the EOSAT project is a contribution to the RMC. So as this project moves forward, we might have to look at extending this into future satellite missions as well. So all of that we will have to take into account as we look at the funding issue. And as much as I indicated some success around the support to industry, 77 million rand to broader industry and 13 million rand to the SMEs, we still think that the support to the local industry is still relatively small. We can do a lot better if we had the funding to do that. And in fact, there's a big capacity issue in the industry where there is a capacity to do a lot of these things, but funding is a constraint. And a big problem that we still have to address with regards to the industry is the transformation issue. And we can only do that if we have viable programs and projects on the ground. So in terms of the road ahead, what we have done in this financial year is to look at whether SANSA is on the right track. And what we've come up with is a new 5-year strategic framework. And the focus now is not just on looking at the South African context. It's also looking at the broader African context. How can SANSA position itself as a leading agency in Africa to provide some of these services and products to other African countries? In fact, we just came back from Ethiopia last week. We were discussing the African space program. And just to give you a sense, we've been in discussion even last week with countries such as Sudan, Egypt, Nigeria, Gabon, Ghana, all wanting a partnership with South Africa because of what we have done to date. So we are exploring those opportunities as well. And in fact, there's a delegation from Ethiopia right now as we speak, looking at how we can foster collaboration in space science and technology. We have also adopted a financial sustainability strategy in terms of how do we make SANSA more financially sustainable, and there's a whole suite of interventions that we've identified that we can take up. And then with regards to the high-performing agency, we undertook a culture survey, and we identified the key issues from a people HR perspective. And we are going through a whole change management process to change the culture within SANSA. And we also looked at the structure of the organization in terms of the structural realignment. And the prime focus is on the efficiency and also the stabilization of space engineering. And just to put that into context, the staff that's currently working in space engineering are funded out of the EOSAT-1 project, which means if the EOSAT-1 project comes to an end, the staff have to go. So that's not the sustainable model, because that's critical stuff. If the next mission happens, we need that organizational memory for the next mission. So we need to stabilize that particular division. There's also now, given the fact that we have to be more sustainable, a stronger focus on marketing and the strategic partnerships that I just mentioned and communications to be more outward focused in terms of leveraging some of the opportunities that are out there. So, Chair, I think we, just in a nutshell, in the 2016-17, we've, as I indicated, achieved more than 80% of the target under a financially constrained environment, and that's because of the fiscal environment we're operating in. But I think, all in all, we've done pretty good in terms of the achieving those indicators. So, Chair, I thank you for your attention, and if there's any questions.
Chair, if I may also, thank you, Dr. Mansami, also mention to the committee that this would be our fifth clean audit consecutively for the organization as well. And then also to thank the DST and the officials as well for their continued support, and to the minister and then to the committee for keeping us accountable for the spend that we have of South African funds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and CEO. We welcome the presentation and congratulate you also on the fifth clean audit. Also congratulating you, Dr. Mansami, for your appointment. You must continue flying the South African flag high. Thanks. We had also applied to go and attend the International Astronautical Conference, but our application was turned down, so we missed it. But we're going to take it up because I'm informed that somebody from trade and industry did attend. So, and we did highlight that it's got more to do with science and technology than trade and industry, but we had looked at a joint study tours and attendance of that conference. So we missed out. Let me give to honourable members for questions and comments. Honourable Tak, Honourable Matale, Honourable King, and Honourable Koronov for that order. Thanks. Honourable Tak.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Although some of my questions has been answered, now I will ask them again. Thank you. On a question, my question one, page two, bullet one, the 52 direct jobs supported, could you give a breakdown, for example, gender, provinces, etc., origin of recruitment, and whether PDIs and the terms, whether it is permanent or contracts? My second question, the 13 million to SMEs, I would like to see also a breakdown of where to did resources go. Question three, bullet four is 32 participants in a joint international space weather camp. What is your backup plan and where do they come from? Have they been recruited or are they coming from your system? Are they going to be trained further on this in this direction? My third question, employee distribution. I haven't seen your racial distribution. I haven't seen your racial distribution of the previous term, but I would like to know about the growth plan since the balance there doesn't make sense. Therefore, I need to see a growth plan from your side, if there is one or is it going to be created. My fourth question, gender distribution growth to slow unless you prove me otherwise, if you can supply me with last term's growth. Question five, implementation challenges. Taking note of these challenges, the top five bullets, I would want to know what is your plans ahead within the 2 years before scaling down, which could be negative, not being able to implement the full mandates, GNSS and telecoms. That is my five questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tak. Honorable Matale.
Thanks, Chair, to join you as well to congratulate the CEO on being elected Deputy President. I just have one question based on the target that have not been achieved. You said to develop a satellite one, which you at some point you stopped to look at other, if there are other better ways to do it which will cost less. Was that not, that exercise not supposed to have been done in the beginning before you start constructing? Because if you engage in a construction work and you stop halfway to go and establish whether you can't do it cheaper, the moment you stop, the when you come back to start, the cost will have escalated. Unlike if you had continued with what you were doing, you might find that not that you'll make savings, but you know when you construct and stop, your costs will go up. I just find it a bit difficult to understand why do you do something like that. It's like an afterthought that we should not have used this method of construction. It's going to be costly. But I thought before you started to construct, you'll have looked at the best method and said this is the best method. And once you start with it, you know, you go full steam because you know, that was the, you know, it's an exercise that you do after you have looked at various options. I just find it a bit not very much convincing for you know, stop start. I think that's the question. But generally, one is comfortable with the work that SANSA is doing, and they keep on doing the good work. One day, I believe, we'll be able to be shown these imaginary things live, because, you know, we're told most of the things in people imagine that this is how they look like. But we know with your work, we will be able to see them, okay, this is what they look like, even if it's not in our lifetime, but those who will come after us probably will be able to benefit from the work that we are doing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matale. Honorable King.
I also like to take the opportunity to congratulate you on a clean audit and on keeping your finances well intact. I went through the books and it was really superb. But then I also have a concern. The risk committee highlighted four areas of concern. I'm not going to mention it all. But what are you doing to mitigate with regards to these areas that they've identified? And also the last question is, have you made any progress with your application to formalize the land use rights in the area that you currently occupy? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable King.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I was intrigued by the solar storm. And what I want to ask you, you know, when there is a frequency blackout, will it affect general aviation? So, you know, the normal aircraft going from Johannesburg and Cape Town, will that be affected if it's a, you know, a weather storm like the size we have seen? And then also, you know, we are protected by the magnetic field around Earth. And we also know that the magnetic field is not, you know, it's thinner on the poles and thicker, you know, on the outsides. And luckily, it appears that we cannot compromise the magnetic field. Can you just say to me that is definitely also your research, that humans cannot compromise the magnetic field? And then on the space program spending, if we look at South Africa, we are a very small player. And if we look at Africa, Africa is also a fairly small player. And then if you look at the United States and you combine Europe, you know, even Ireland is bigger than us, you know, in terms of spending. And they even have a share in the European Union spending. Now, my concern is, if you look at the United States, why are they such a big spending? Do they try to be a dominant player in space? Now, if they are, obviously they are a dominant player in space, does it mean they can dominate space for the wrong reasons? Does it mean that they can control other states from space by blocking out, you know, people they don't like? And, you know, it appears to me, you know, the race in space is not over. But my concern is the small amount that South Africa is spending. You know, is that a concern for you? I just want to know. And should it be a concern for Africa that Africa is such a low spender in terms of space? And then, in terms of fundraising, obviously, I think South Africa is well positioned with regard to that. But are you positive that you will reach your targets in terms of fundraising?
Thank you very much, honorable members, for those questions. You know, the amount of the spending and where we position the South Africa is indeed a worry. And I'm glad that we'll be meeting with the DG and see what can be done. You know, more especially when we as South Africa have produced the likes of the Elon Musk, and yet we just a drop in the ocean when it comes to participation thereof. I was told that he was coming to South Africa, invited either 2017 or 2018, I'm not sure. But on the, I just wanted to find out on those supported students, the 87 students that mostly from TDI, on how many are female of those young students. the public lectures, you did say that you even with the research papers, you are above average with the public lectures. Was that your target, or you exceeded your target with the 7 of the lectures that was will be there? And we will welcome, and we're looking forward to the invitation to Armenas. At the last AIC, in most sessions, South Africa was, placed high, especially as an important role player within the African continent, and seen as a vehicle to ensure that Africa becomes an important player within that space area. So it is worrying the amount that we invest when the world out there has got confidence in us. So I think we need to do more, including ourselves as a committee, to also galvanize and advocate for more funds so that we are indeed an international role player. I think we want to commend you with working with other departments like the DTPS, because we are one country and we have the same goal. So we shouldn't work in silos, that no, this is ours, that is theirs. So I think it's commendable. That relationship should continue being strengthened. And I think you mentioned that you are constrained by funding, especially in relation to the local industry. And it is. I'm surprised that none of the members didn't raise, especially Honorable Tuck and Honorable Kekana. Those question around the localization or local industry comes from them. On the EOSET one, I just wanted to find out your relationship. You mentioned the others, the Nigeria, Algeria, Angola, and so. What about Ghana as a role player? And yeah, I think those were mine. But once again, to congratulate you for the good work that you're doing. Thanks. Chairperson. Also, just for our planning, the proposed date or time for the Armenas project.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the questions and the interest expressed in what we do at SANSA. So I'm going to try and proceed with the questions as they were asked, but I'll also ask Ger to assist where necessary. Chair, on the 52 direct jobs and even on the 13 million rand allocated to SMEs, there's a request for the breakdown. I don't have it on the top of my head, but what we can do is respond formally in writing with regards to those demographics.
Yeah, then you can send them to Shana.
Yeah, okay. We'll certainly do that. And then on the 32 participants, I don't know, Kurt, do you have a response to that?
So, yes, that is a joint venture between South Africa, some students from Michigan, and also the German Space Agency, DLR. And every year it gets, there's a different host. This year it was in South Africa. The previous year it was in America. So it's a combination of students internationally and South African students who's got bursars with SANSA. And it's about, I think I should get the exact figures from you from the South African side, but I think it's about 10 or 11 students from South Africa who is involved in this. But it's directly related to the bursars that we give at SANSA.
And then on the employee distribution and the gender distribution, on the graphs themselves, We did put the distribution for the previous financial year, the ones in red, orange. So the ones in black is for the 2016-17 financial year, and the ones in red are for the 2015-16 financial year. And that was to show you how we progressed. So it's not much of progress. So on the African leg, we moved from 62% in the 2015-16 to 64% on the 2016-17. I'm not sure whether it answers the question, even on the gender distribution. Okay, it's the same. We've put that in red as well. And on the implementation challenges, there was a question around whether the scaling down would affect how we deal with the full mandate of SANSA, especially on the GNSS and telecoms. The kind of, if we had to scale down, obviously, when we look at the new areas that we haven't been fulfilling the mandate, like GNSS and telecoms, we don't necessarily have those skill set in SANSA. So if you are scaling down, we wouldn't necessarily affect that those particular areas. In fact, we will have to upskill on that side. We'll probably have to recruit new staff on that end. But obviously, when you're scaling down, it's a very sensitive issue in terms of labor law. And that's our last resort. It's not something that we're considering right now. At the moment, we're just realigning the organization to make it more efficient. But we are also wary, given the financial situation of presented chair, that in 2 years' time, our salary bill will overshoot the parliamentary grant. And that's a cause for concern, and that's probably where we need to take action. And then on the EOSAP 1 repositioning, and why are we doing that now versus when we should have done that exercise? So that exercise was done at the very beginning. So just to give you a sense, in terms of what's being built for EOSAP, effectively there's two or three players in South Africa could build the same satellite. So at the moment, Denel is the prime contractor for the satellite, and they have to subcontract other players. But what's actually happened, the other players could effectively be prime contractors. They've been playing in the international market, and in fact they've launched satellites for other clients abroad. And just to give you a sense, when we were in discussion around this, one of the key components of that is the imager that goes into the satellite, which is being developed by Denel. But because the other satellite players have built images for other satellites that they've sold abroad, the question is, could we have used that imager that they've already developed whereas Denel was still developing? So we have to do a cost trade-off to see whether there's other options we could bring in, as opposed to allowing just Denel to do the R&D on those images. So this space moves very quickly. And if you don't keep stock and take your checks and balances as you go along, you might find that the technology you're putting in tomorrow is outdated. So we have to check whether, you know, we're keeping up to pace with new technology as well. And that's why now and again we just do a kind of a check against what's out there and whether we could bring in the new technologies into the design as well. Okay. And in fact, I should just mention, one of the things we're probably toying with, and we haven't even discussed it with our colleagues as yet, there are other payloads that we think we could make an inroad. And whether we could include those payloads in the EOSAT 1. So there's different configurations that we're looking at as we go along.
No, the thing is I responded to him before I could be given the opportunity to speak, Chair, thanks. I hear what you are saying, but I don't know whether I'm being helped, although yeah, I'm being further confused. I'm not sure. Maybe for now, let me just accept that I hear what you are saying. But because my question is, the decision that you took to want to see if you can do it better, was it not a costly decision?
Yes, so there is some cost involved, but I think if you do it correctly, you could offset the costs by the cost savings that would come through. And that's an international experience. So just to give you a sense, this is a systems engineering problem because it's many different components that you have to, from an engineering perspective, ensure that they all talk to each other. And you go through different stages. So the first stage is the preliminary design review, which is what we're currently doing. And once you've done that, so sometime next year we do what is called a critical design review. So as you build those components, you do a design review. And if those don't pan out as you expected, then you have to look at other options as well. So it's not that the design is frozen and you know exactly what goes into the satellite. Because some of these, at least 50% of the components come from abroad that we have to pay for. So, and that market changes as well. And we have to test whether there's other components that can go in there. So you have to continuously evaluate the project as you go along. It's not frozen. We can get our satellite engineer to speak to you if you want more clarity on that.
It's not a question of wanting clarity. You know, the principle of construction is the same. It doesn't matter whether you are doing a satellite to launch to go to the space. It's the same thing. Before you construct, you design. And then you quantify this thing, and then once you are, this will cost you 10 rand. And then you start constructing knowing that this will cost you 10 rand. But if in the course of constructing, you then say, no man, won't there be a cheaper way to do this? And then you go, you stop, you want to find out if there is a cheaper way to do this. When you stop, the cost of things don't stop because you are stopping wanting to do it cheaper. But life goes on, effectively. So as people who are scientists, and you know, when you see there's a difference between you and me. I am a member of parliament. I go to a village. They don't have water. You are a scientist. What you do must be at par with what they do in Japan. They've appointed you president. You can't think the way I do because, you know, I go to the village, then I greet the next door, hey, how are you? I'm fine. Hey, I'm okay. Hey, where is so-and-so? The last time I saw him, he was going this way. If you follow that path, you just go straight, and straight is not far. You'll find him there. You don't do it that way. You do it differently. So, yeah. All I'm saying is that I'm not. You are not convincing me very much as to. I'm not very much convinced, but I hear what you are saying. I don't want to belabor the point, Chair. I think I hear what he's saying. It's just that he's answering me, but he's trying to present it in such a manner that, no, there's no problem. That's the long and short of what he's saying to me, and it's okay. I can live with that. But,
Chair, just my parting remark on this one. If you had to build an aircraft, and you're right, engineering principles are the same, but building a spacecraft is a different issue altogether. If you build an aircraft, you can bring that aircraft back and fix up any problems that it has and fly it back again. With a satellite, you have one chance. And your biggest constraint on a satellite, apart from cost, is to reduce the risk. And you've got to continuously assess what the risk factor is, and that's where you try to minimize the risk. If you can continuously find ways of reducing the risk, you will keep looking at new options as well. And that's what you do in a satellite project. But, yes, we can provide more. It's a risk, the cost. new. As I said, the imager that was developed before has flown before. The one that Janelle is building is still building. So do you use the one that you're still building or the one that's flown before? You know, those kind of things that you... But anyway, yeah, it's about managing the risk. And then there was the risk aspect, whether the four risk factors. So the EOSAT one, I think I've mentioned some of those risk elements and we're managing those. The other three risk factors, the ERP system, I think it's almost, we're going live. We've already gone live on some of the modules. I think there's probably one or two modules that are still, but before the year is out, that will be finished, the ERP. And then the change management we started, I indicated we did a culture survey. So we're going through a whole change management process as we speak, actually. Okay, so that's been done. And then we've also got a committee that's been put together to do the business continuity. In fact, I think we're presenting that before the month is over in October. So we've tried to address all of the risk factors. So I think we're on track on managing all of the risks that we have on hand. And then the land use rights, whether we're making any impact on there, I'll have to check. To be quite honest, I'm not sure. I'll have to check with our Earth Observation colleagues who work with land reform and rural development and come back to you on that one. And then on the solar storm, whether general aviation was affected, I don't know.
Yes, definitely. There is a. We refer to it as a radio blackout. There's fortunately on a commercial aircraft a lot of systems that they can use and they can switch over between systems to for navigation purposes. The big effect or the huge influence of when such a storm occurs is more on the accuracy of the instrumentation. It's more specifically the GPS accuracy, and that definitely gets interfered with. What we normally do during such an event is we do predictions for, if we focus on the Navy, on HF communications, we can tell them to switch to specific frequencies that will help them. But in an event of GPS accuracy, we can just say that the accuracy will be interfered with, so we can't exactly tell them what the accuracy will be. So the short is that, yes, it gets interfered with on the commercial aircraft. It's not life-threatening. All the systems is normally in place for safety of life. So that's why they've got more than one system available, which they can try and use to eliminate any possible and to improve on accuracies.
So apart from the HF communications, your magnetic field is fairly static over the land. But if there's a magnetic storm, it changes. Now, can you imagine if you're flying an aircraft from Durban to Cape Town or Johannesburg to Cape Town and you're 1 degree off and you're relying on a magnetic compass? And that's especially on the defense force. So you have to correct that and inform the pilot as well. So there's other effects as well. And then on the magnetic field, whether humans can affect the magnetic field, I think the answer is generally no. But just to give you a sense, if you look at the Earth's magnetic field, it's dipole. So the way you arrive at that, if you have a current that's in a circle, and physics will tell you, if you put your hand in the direction of the current flowing, the magnetic field comes out. So if you look at the Earth's magnetic field, it looks like that. And the only reason you get the Earth's magnetic field is because there's molten lava on the inside of the Earth's core that's flowing around that generates that current. The only way you can interfere if you stop that molten lava from flowing. Unless we get to that point, then the answer is yes. But for the time being, I think the answer is no. Yeah, and I'm just reminded, we're the only country that has a space weather center on the African continent. And as I said, when you require space weather information on the flight paths, we're the only country that can provide it for the African continent. And certainly, SANSA is looking at the... In fact, they map out the magnetic field every 5 years. You do a survey and whether it's changed or not. There's one area that's of interest to us from a science perspective, and that's the area between Southern Africa and South America. It's called the South Atlantic Anomaly, where the magnetic field is fairly weak. which means that excessive radiation from the sun can come through. And that's where we find a lot of satellites get damaged. If they come in and there's a magnetic storm, there's a lot of radiation. And because you're talking about plasma, which is electric, you know, ions and electrons and protons, they actually impact the satellite, and there's discharge inside the satellite, which destroys the satellite. So it's all of those effects that we have to manage as well. South Africa is a small player. USA, why? Are they trying to... Obviously, the USA want to dominate everything. But there's also a large defense aspect to what the US does. But I think, apart from the US, the rest of the world is kind of moving towards international collaboration, and we're seeing a lot more of that. We see China is now wanting to work with other developing countries. In fact, what they've done, they've signed an agreement with the United Nations saying that we are launching our own space station because the US doesn't want us to participate on the International Space Station. So we're going to launch our own, but we're inviting other developing countries to come and join us and propose scientific experiments on there. And you might see the shift in balance as well as countries start to. In fact, when we were in Australia, we had a meeting with the head of European Space Agency, and I think they're fairly impressed with what we're doing, even though we have the financial constraints. And there was an invite to South Africa to become an associate member of the European Space Agency and to participate in some of their projects. And we also got a similar invite from the Asia Pacific Space Corporation Organization, where China is the big lead on that one. And obviously I've mentioned the BRICS as well. But the balance of power is sort of changing. And then on the fundraising, whether we are positive on that, and so the new framework, the strategic framework that I mentioned, is now trying to take us towards Africa. And what we are finding is that there are many foreign entities wanting to come into Africa, but the projects are not successful. And that's because they're coming in from the inside out. And with South Africa, many of our counterparts in the African continent want to work with us. And if we do that effectively, we work from the inside out, and we work alongside each other. And I think that provides a more attractive model in terms of where we can make sense of sustainable, where we work with other partners. And the key aspect to unlocking that is that you have to build capacity in other African countries to have the user base in those countries. So capacity development is a big part of the equation, where you build the demand on that side, that SANSA becomes an attractive partner on that. So those are the kinds of strategic interventions we have to put in place. And if those are in place, then the fundraising issue becomes more positive. The 87 students, how many are female? I'm not sure, Gert, you know offhand?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have it offhand, but we can definitely get back to you on the figures for that.
And then on the public lectures, whether they exceeded it or not, I don't think we had a particular indicator on the public lectures. And this is something we just started to do from the SANSA perspective. So it's not related to any of the indicators. So, yeah. And then on the Space Weather Center, we will certainly indicate when that date is. We're trying to get the minister's diary committed so the minister can launch this, but we'll obviously invite the portfolio committee members as well when that's ready. And then South Africa is placed high in the African continent, and whether we are talking to Ghana, yes, we had a very good conversation with Ghana last week. And in fact, there was a plea from Ghana not just to South Africa, but in the room, to say that we've been trying to get, I think they're in fact in the worst case than we are. They don't have the full political support for their space program. And so they're essentially asking, so how do you do it? As much as we have our challenges, I think we're a little ahead of the game. So they want to find out how do we motivate for a space program, and they're finding a huge problem in terms of challenges on the ground. So I will send out a letter to the head of the Ghanaian Space Science and Technology Institute to invite him here to South Africa and just showcase what we're doing and maybe assist in terms of how we can motivate for Ghana to have a space program that's sustainable. As you recall, Chair, I think Minister was in Ghana about 4 weeks ago for the launch of the Avian Dish, which South Africa invested heavily in. And we are also in discussion with the SKA colleagues and how we can work together in Africa. Because I think if we do that, there's a much more, it makes much more sense in terms of the impact we can make in those African countries. And strategically, that makes sense for us. Thank you, Chair. I think I've answered all of the questions. Thank you.
Question 210. Okay. Is there any follow-up, Honorable Tandy?
Thank you very much, Chair. When I'm looking at your first slide that is talking about performance overview, when you talk about targets that were not achieved in terms of reduction of cost and timelines, normally when we talk about the reduction of cost, most of the time it affects jobs. Now my question is, what are you doing? Because one of your comments was saying, because in terms of you don't have people that deals with the, that deals with telecoms or whatever you said, let me just check. If you don't have those kind of people, what plan, in terms of GNSS and telecoms, what plan do you have? Remember, in your, you've got people, at the site, when it comes to GNSS and telecoms, you don't have the expertise. Now, what do you do to make sure that with this site where you've got too much of staff, what is it that you're going to do in terms of complementing this? You know, what is your plan that is there in place? Because when I listen carefully, it means on the other side there's a lack, on the other side there's too much. Now, too much, what is your plan to make sure that it complements the lack? So it means, what is your plan to do to solve those challenges and to do what we call retraining? And then on gender distributions and on racial distributions, I can see the percentage is high, but on which positions? In terms of Africans, colored and Indians, which positions are they occupying? In terms of gender distributions, I can see also that it's also in terms of males that's high, but females it's 38%. Which positions? Because sometimes we talk about that we've got this, we are reaching that, but when you go closely and look, you'll find that, no man, that's a talk shop. Other issue that I want to understand, in all of this, how many people with disability do we have? Or what is the plan, including youth, to make sure that we reach what we are saying as a country? And I come from Northern Cape. I just want to understand, I'm just making to say, sometimes we've got all these things, we've got the sky in Northern Cape, but now what I want to understand is to say, around the demographics of the province itself, because that's where it's mirror, how many benefits in terms of bursaries, how many in terms of work, or are we taking people outside the province, outside the country, and bring them on board? In terms of your fundraising efforts, because you are talking about to fundraise or to collaborate with others, most of the time I've realized that we will be talking about investors, whoever is coming, but those people, when they come, my own observation, someone will correct me through your chair, they just take out of South Africa, we benefit nothing. And then they say to us, we've benefited. But when you look closely, no one is benefiting. So whoever comes on board, that is my suggestion, we need to make sure that people are benefiting in the country,
There's also localization. There's also skills. What sharing of skills or parting of skills. It should be part of the agreement with whatever you're doing. You know, from experience, I've seen that it's only looting out of our countries as Africans, but we benefit nothing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tandu. Lastly, I just wanted to find out, probably it also deals with the issue of mentoring, internship, and stuff like that. I just wanted to find out what happened to Mandla, myself, who was supposed to go to space and I think in also trying to produce more of the likes, the program that he was in to be eventually one of those that succeed successfully were identified for the project. What internship programs do you have, and how is it popularized? How do you target, especially when we look at the, for instance, the real local township skill and capacitation, because they are young people who have gone to school in this field, but now they are stuck. They don't know where to go. And yeah, thanks. Chairperson. Okay.
Just in terms of the reduction of the cost, if we were going to reduce the cost of the EOSAT 1, that does not necessarily equate to losing jobs on that project, that particular project. So just to give you a sense, and it's probably hard to imagine, in South Africa, with the EOSAT 1 project, we have about 45 engineers working on the project. If you go to a country like China, who are building the same satellite, there's 600 engineers working on a similar project. So we are able to do it at much more cost-effective level. So, and we're not going to be shutting the door in terms of the employees or reducing on that. What I'm talking about is internal to SANSA. And that's not excessive staff. I'm talking about the staffing versus the budgeting. If we don't have money to pay for salaries, then we have to go down that road. So it's not balancing between losing staff on the EOSAT 1 with the GNSS and telecoms. Now, just to put it into perspective, on the GNSS and the telecoms, we will only start employing staff if there is a business case to do that, to make it sustainable. If we can't demonstrate that, we're not going to be employing new staff. Okay, so that's not that. And then, Chair, on the gender and the demographics, there is a table on page 98 of the annual report, this document, which gives you the breakdown in terms of gender and demographics and at what level they're actually employed. So it's the actual annual report itself. Okay. I haven't put it into the PowerPoint. I don't think there's numbers for disability, but we can come back to you on that one. And most of them are currently on the professional and skill technical levels and academic levels. Okay. On the bursaries and whether people are employed, especially in the Northern Cape, I need to draw a distinction between SKA and what SANSA does. So SKA is a completely different project that sits in the National Research Foundation, and that project is run out of the Northern Cape, the Meerkat. So I think that question must go to the SKA office. And then on the people benefiting, the kind of funders we're looking at is not necessarily your private sector investors. I mean, the people we are talking is the South African Development Bank, the African Development Bank, the IDCs that we're engaging, the DTI, and that, and even on the DST side, looking at that. And so I don't think in terms of the investors we're talking about, it's necessarily those private sector investments. That's not to say we won't go there if there's an opportunity, but obviously we'll have to do our due diligence in terms of what is the cost benefit and whether we're giving anything away for free. So we're mindful of that as well. On the mentorship and internship, I'll ask Gert to come in, but just on Mandla Maseko, we did provide support to him. In fact, we gave him an office in SANSA, but he has not used that office in the last year or two. I understand he is now being employed by the Defense Force as a pilot. So he's got a formal appointment with the Defense. Just on in terms of the mentorship and internship and whether there's a program, I'll just ask Gert to talk about maybe the mobile labs and what you're doing on that front.
All right, so specifically from the space science side, which is located in Hermanus, we're focusing a lot on internships and mentoring of students, learners. We've got a mobile lab which goes out into the rural areas and expose the learners to science and technology. They're actually leaving today for the Eastern Cape. And so it's not just regional-based focus. They're focusing on the whole of the country. We do provide mentorship to students, specifically in physics and space science, if they're focusing on space. We do provide give opportunities for winter schools and summer schools where students can come and participate. We had our first student workshop last week here in the Western Cape, and that got all the bursars from SANSA together and showcase their work. So we do create opportunities for people to participate and sort of show what they've learned and help other people to develop as well.
Chair, what I should also point out is that in our terms of our target, we had indicated we're going to target 9,000 students, but you'll notice that we actually targeted close to 19,000 students. So we tried to up the game on that one.
Thank you very much for the presentation and the response to the questions from honourable members, and I think there will also be an open line in case they want to engage further on honourable Matale. So. Not the village answer, the space answer. Yeah, but we also heard how you're struggling with funds while competing globally with people who've got huge investments in the space industry. And I think also that as a continent, we need to do more so that South Africa is identified as that area that could change the landscape of Africa in relation to space agency and stuff like that. And so some way we can also appreciate if you listen to what Ghana is going through and coming to find out and how do you ensure that there's a political will in this. But I think we're also guided by the NDP that want to see all these science and technology and driving the economy of the country. So and knowing that there is a political, the minister is involved, wants to help and wants to ensure that eventually we do get the funds that we require. And also from our part as the committee in our report, we'll include such areas and continuously to engage and show that eventually everybody understands the importance of science and technology and that the required funds
are allocated to the department so that all these entities and the programs that are there are realized. But we want to thank you once again, and we'll continue engaging with yourselves on other areas, reports and stuff like that. So, yeah, thank you very much. Yes. Honorable members, we then ask Shanaz. Yeah, we can go. Alrighty. Honourable members, let us, can we continue? Thanks. I just want Shanaz just to take us through.
Okay, just in terms of the committee program, I think we're going to have to make a few small changes to it in that one. This was now the last entity that we engage. We had initially envisaged that this entity plus CSIR, because CSIR would have, well, had the event last week. We had envisaged that they wouldn't come at last week, but then they requested to do it before their event and not at this week. So we've kind of spaced it so that we had another week for BRR next week, which is an open slot, but now that slot is open, so members can advise whether we would want to use it or whether we just want to leave it open for now. Because the report is also kind of 90% ready, we can distribute it. We're supposed to, if members agree or if members want to add, we can finalize tomorrow with additions. I can circulate it now. So that's the one kind of proposal that members need to apply their mind to. Then a further change to the program is on the 15th November. The department wrote to chair to say that the second quarter report won't be ready at that time, maybe a week or two later. And if we can change that slot with the one we had asked for update on the R&D spend, the NDG had indicated in that meeting that they're ready. So if we could slot that maybe in for the 15th of November. That's the two changes to the program. And then the further issues that the chair had raised last week is that she's still pursuing having the interaction with a house chair regarding our applications. We're just gathering all the information and preparatory work for that. And I think she's talking about resubmitting the application for international travel. I think those are the three major things that we can open for. Oh, it's the launch for the cyclic, whatever thrusting it is of theirs. It's still on, but I didn't put in an application because I haven't had the response. I initially thought it was last week and Friday, so, I mean, there'd been no indication that anybody wanted to go last week. So it's this Friday, so if there is anyone, then we can pursue it.
Maybe
could just have an indication if there will be members who are available for that chamber lab.
If she sent me the details, then, you know, I can go on my own. You don't need to put in an application. But, you know, let me just see. I am in the West Cape, so I... But I just want... I don't want to waste 3 hours of... If it's a big party, then I'm definitely not going. But if it's instrumental to adding something, then I'll probably consider.
Thank you very much, Honorable Polono, for that offer. And other members can indicate if they, they're interested. I propose that the draft report should be circulated so that tomorrow when we deal with the report, and then it's easier. Members can send through their comments or proposals. But tomorrow we are meeting on. I think we're meeting at the same venue here tomorrow at 9:30 once again to deal with the 9:30 to 10:30, not from 10:30. Honorable Kekana.
Yeah, Chair. Thanks very much. I just want to highlight some few things that maybe distract, is part of the things that distract our work. I just want to check with you, Chair, what, how far are you with the issue of research? As you know, that the committee has maybe more than a year without the research. Oh, thank you very much. Please, I just want to update, and then the overdue documents, the documents that we requested from other entities of the department when they come to report, for example, where we found irregular expenditures, and we found that since we have requested them, they don't give us the SKY reports. They've never gave us today. They ask them another ones. Please, let's get those reports within 7 days. Because I started to be, in fact, let me put it in this way. I'm aware that most of the department, when they come here, they lie to us. You'll find that on what they present, 70% is right, 30% is wrong. And I found this from other committees. When we busy interrogating and checking what is happening, you will be shocked. Then I'm scared because of, at the end of the day, it will be seen as if we are promoting corruption. Remember, if we have never followed that one, whereby we found that they had three successive irregularities, where the CEO and company secretary and the CFO were fired. If we have never checked it back, we will never find it. And number two, I think it's more important maybe to know where is the minister in all these things. You see, we must be very, very, very serious in fighting corruption. And it's unacceptable for any entity after they found irregularities and then without condonation and outside the period of 90 days, they've never even done anything. Well, to them is life as usual. I think maybe this committee must start to be very vigilant when coming to these issues. And otherwise, if they don't do that, we'll be left with one option as a committee to do in our own investment.